We're going to turn our attention today to some common stock characteristics and then begin the much-involved process of assigning numeric measures and valuations to our stocks. It's a long process, so relax. Let's get started on slide 61. A stock spin-off. Huh? Well, this is a conversion of one of a firm's subsidiaries, one or more, to a standalone company by distribution of stock in that new company to existing shareholders. Sometimes the new company is still majority owned by the company that spun it off. For example, Kraft was spun off by Altria, the company that makes Marlboro cigarettes. And then Altria divested themselves of the international tobacco business. Pepsi Cola owned Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell, and they spun them off into another company. SpaceX currently is a company that's privately held, and they are talking. Mr. Musk is making noises as though he will spin off his satellite company from SpaceX. He probably will keep SpaceX private and spin off the satellite company. It's called Starlink, right? It's called Starlink into a separate company. And the history of spinoffs have been checkered. Some spinoffs have done better than the companies that spun them off. The examples of this are the Baby Bells after being spun off from the old AT&T, they were started off with 9 of them, and then they started merging until finally they're just 2. And one of them got big enough to turn around and buy the old AT&T, and that's the new AT&T. The other one was Bell Atlantic, which has become Verizon, right? Some spinoffs have not fared so well. Coca-Cola Enterprises, which was spun off from Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola Enterprises was the company that bottled Coca-Cola. They didn't make the syrup. They made they put it in the bottles, and it didn't do so well. And I think Coca-Cola bought them again. And then Lucent Technologies. Oh my goodness. We'll come back to Lucent Technologies later on. It was spun off from the old AT&T. They are examples of disappointments. So sometimes it's a great deal, and yes, you do very well by having your stock spun off into a new company. So you still keep your stock of the old company, but you get stock in the new company too. And then sometimes it doesn't turn out so well. So it's a mixed bag. A stock split. We hear quite a bit about stock splits, but not as much as we used to because of technology. A stock split is a maneuver in which a company increases the number of shares outstanding by exchanging a specified number of new shares for each outstanding share. Typically, it's 2-for-1, but it could be 3-for-2 or 5-for-1. So a 2-for-1 split, you had 100 shares, you now have 200 shares. Yippee! Whoop, 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 whoop. Wrong. The price went down in half from, say, $20 down to $10 because there is no increased value from a stock split. It's a psychological increase at best. If you had one share at $20, you now have 2 shares at $10. The value is still $20. Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway fame, the sage of Omaha, has refused to split his stock since its inception because he always thought it was an accounting gimmick. A single share now goes for under $350,000. Well, there used to be a technological reason for why companies would split their shares. Remember, we wanted investors, or at least Wall Street wanted investors, to buy 100 share round lots. So it's hard when one stock is worth $350,000. But now with technology, it's no big deal. You can buy 0.5 shares or 0.05 shares of a company with the new technology. So it's not important. What I've noticed, and that doesn't mean I'm right, I'm just guessing, is that companies often split their shares when they are trying to tell the world that, hey, we think things are doing pretty darn well. Because they don't actually want to say that, because if it turns out that things didn't do so well, they can get sued. Yeah, our litigious society. So they will split their shares. And this is what happened when I was in part of the investment club and we owned Qualcomm. Qualcomm split their shares. And I was looking at the numbers. I was thinking, well, you know, maybe they think it's a good time for them. And it turned out it was. This was, you know, several years ago. Oh, by the way, sometimes there are reverse splits, huh? You had 5 shares and now you have 1, or you had 10 shares and now you have 1. Why would they do that? Well, when a stock price gets low enough, it starts to look really bad for the company. So if it gets down below $1, what they'll do is they'll say, okay, let's reverse split. We'll take 10 of your shares and give you 1 and increase the price by tenfold, obviously. So it looks like it looks better than it's usually a bad sign when that happens. Usually means the company is on the skids. So be careful if you are ever in a reverse split. Slide 63, treasury stock. Now, what is this? Well, these are shares of stock that have been sold but then subsequently repurchased by the issuing firm. It's sometimes called a share buyback or a buyback. And so how does this work? Well, once the company buys back the shares, they are no longer in circulation. They're no longer part of the shares outstanding. So the logic is that the shares buybacks are going to reduce the number of shares outstanding. And since there will be less supply, what do you economics fans or economic students know? When you reduce the supply and the demand doesn't change, the price should go up. Existing shareholders now have a larger percentage ownership of the corporation. And during the run-up of the 1990s and lately, share buybacks were often seen as a better alternative to dividend increases. The belief was that investors were more interested in capital gains than dividends, and that buybacks increase the potential for capital gains by reducing the supply of stock. Well, fine. But there have been, in my humble opinion, some egregious misusage of share buybacks. Companies have borrowed tremendous sums of money just to buy back their shares. Well, was that a smart thing? In the short term, sure. But now you got all this debt on your balance sheet. And when the much ballyhooed tax cut of 2017 came about, it reduced corporate taxes tremendously. And the idea was that companies were going to hire a whole bunch of new people. It didn't happen. What did they do? They gave people a $1,000 bonus, the employees, and then they bought back hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of their shares. So much for the tax cut helping the little guy. It sure helped us investors. So who's complaining? I'm not. I guess I am, because that wasn't the reason we were supposed to. Let's not get into politics. Okay. I remember Agent Orange saying how none of the people up on this, when he was talking with them, all the people who were involved with it, were not going to prosper. And of course they did. Slide 64, stock characteristics classifications. Common stock issued by company in different classes, each of which holds or offers different privileges and benefits to its holders. Class A, Class B, Class C. Don't confuse this with the mutual fund shares. That's how people are charged. These are the different share classifications and the benefits and perks of each. At one time, GM, I think they had 7 or 8 classifications. It was kind of strange. They don't do that anymore. But one example is Facebook. There are 2 classifications, A and B. And the A shares are what you and I get to buy if we are so inclined. And the B shares are held by the CEO, Mr. Zuckerberg, and close associates. The B shares have 10 times the voting power of the A shares. This was done so that Mr. Zuckerberg never gets kicked out of the CEO's job. So he's got an ironclad hold on the company. Another example is Berkshire Hathaway. Remember we talked about the Berkshire Hathaway shares, the original shares? Those are the Class A shares that are selling now for around $350,000. Well, this wasn't lost upon Wall Street. They were bugging Mr. Buffett to offer to either split his shares or come up with something that's more reasonable for people to buy. And you know, he's a bit of a curmudgeon, which means, you know, he's a little grumpy. He doesn't want to go with the flow. And so, all right, okay, I'll do it. So he created these Class B shares. In the prospectus, when they issued the Class B shares, he said, I wouldn't buy these things. You shouldn't either. But of course, people did, because it allowed them to get into the Berkshire Hathaway shares without having to come up with whatever. I think they were worth $20,000 or $30,000 at the time. This was, you know, in the mid-90s. But what happened with the B shares is Mr. Buffett, he saw, I can do stuff with these things. Yeah, I can use these as cash to buy other companies. So he split them 50-for-1 back in 2010. They now sell for around $235. Of course, you know, check out, of course, the price changes every day, so check it out. But he now uses those B shares like cash to buy other companies. So he turned out it worked out for him, even though he didn't want people to buy them at first. He said, I can use these things. Google is another one. It has two different classifications. Check them out. Check them out. Slide number 65. Some other common stock values. Well, the par value, you know, I never have really figured this out. On the original stock certificates that nobody sees anymore, although there are some out there on the web for you to take a look at, they would say it's worth a dollar or a penny or something like that. And I've never really understood, and they tell you about this in the Series 7 when you take the stockbroker exam, and I never really understood what they're worth, because par value is not worth anything. It will be worth something when we get the bonds, but with regard to stocks, it's just a stupid number that they put on them. The book value is far more important, and we're going to take a look at book value as we go along. That is an accounting number that the accountants produce for us. It's the amount of shareholders' equity in a firm, which is equal to the assets minus the liabilities, and what is called preferred stock, which we'll deal with later on. So does this sound familiar? If you've taken Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, remember net worth is equal to your assets minus your liabilities. If you're an accounting major, oh my goodness, you know this. They use the term equity equals assets minus liability. But often what they do is they say assets equals liabilities and equity. I don't know why they do that, but they do. So because on the balance sheet, assets are on the left side and liabilities and equities are on the right side. But we don't use balance sheets that way anymore because of spreadsheets. Now they just have assets, liabilities, and equity. So the book value is something that we will take a look at later on when we deal with valuation. But the one that everyone talks about is the market value, the prevailing market value of a security. In other words, what are people paying for it? The par value, the book value, for the most part, are not important. The book value becomes important once the market value falls below the book value, which it very rarely ever does. If it does, that's a very bad sign. That's a sign that the company's in trouble and that people are dumping the shares. And there's a real danger. If those values, if that book value, if the assets on the book really are worth what the accountants say they're worth, of the company being raided for its assets and liquidated and put out of business. And that's what you might have heard of: corporate raiders, takeover artists, private equity firms. That's what one of the things they do. Dividends, slide 66. Oh, aren't we big fans of dividends? Oh, yes, we are. Dividends don't lie. These are shares, these are the share of earnings, distribution of earnings that are given to stockholders. In the United States and all other countries that had something to do in the past with the United Kingdom, Canada, Hong Kong, South Africa, and UK, of course, Australia, dividends are typically paid quarterly. So just remember that in the United States, dividends are typically paid quarterly. When you go outside the United States or all those other countries that had something to do with the UK in the past, they typically will pay every 6 months or even just once a year. Throughout Europe, it was just typical for them to pay once a year. That was it. They paid their dividends once a year. The board of directors decides how much, if any, dividends should be paid and when to pay them. Dividends are usually a percentage of the earnings per share. And that's another very important number, because why are businesses in business? To earn money, to produce earnings. So the earnings per share allow us to look at the earnings of each of our little shares that we own and think of each share like a little business. How much did you earn last year, one little share? Oh, I earned 50 cents. Oh, I earned $2.50. And we are going to use these values in our pursuit of coming up with what a stock is actually worth. So here's an example on slide 67. A company reports net profit of $1 million. Yippee! What a bunch! That's a lot of money. Well, up to you and me it is, but we don't know how much it is unless we know how many shares are outstanding. So let's say there are 500,000 shares outstanding. So our earnings per share, it's a very simple calculation. By the way, you don't have to do it. I mean, we're going to do it in our class, but you just look it up. $1 million of earnings divided by 500,000 shares equals $2 of earnings per share. Now, the board of directors might decide to pay out 50% of the earnings per share in the form of dividends, in which case each shareholder would receive a dollar dividend for each share that they owned. Of course, remembering that companies in the United States pay quarterly, so they'd get 25 cents. And this is what you're going to be up against when you do your research, because some websites report the yearly earnings on a dollar basis, and some report the quarterly earnings. So you look at one website, and it'll be a dollar, and you'll say, okay, cool. And you go to another website, it says 25 cents, and you say, wait a minute, what's going on here? But both of them will show it as a dividend yield, and we'll get to that in a bit. But they will differ on who tells you, you know, which company. One website will tell you the yearly dividends, another website will tell you the quarterly dividends. And so if they decide to pay out 50% of the earnings in the form of dividends, they are using a dividend payout ratio of 50%. The company is paying out 50% of their earnings to shareholders in the form of dividends. Now, is this typical? Well, it depends on the company. Companies that have been around for a long time will pay more than 50%. Other companies that are still growing will say, you know what, we don't want to spend too much money in the form of dividends. We need that money in the form of retained earnings. And you accountants have to remember that, but here you don't have to remember that. So that the company can use that money to grow. Mm-hmm. So older, more mature companies will pay out more of a percentage of their earnings. Newer companies growing, they need the capital, they need the money, they will pay out less of a percentage. So the dividend yield is the measure that relates the dividends to the share price, and this puts stock dividends on a relative percentage basis rather than the absolute dollar basis. And this allows us to compare our stocks with other income-oriented vehicles such as bonds or savings accounts. So if the stock in the previous slide was paying a dollar dividend, and if they were selling for $20, then we would take the dollar dividend divided by the $20 price, and that would give us a dividend yield of 5%. And again, we're going to do a few of these calculations. They're not hard to do, but you just look it up. Traditionally, 3 to 6% was normal. But in the 1980s, dividends went down and down until finally, at March of 2000, they hit 1%, which was the bottom, right at the peak of the internet bubble. They went back above 3% in 2008-09. Why? Because prices went so far low. Remember, you can either increase the numerator or decrease the denominator to make the percentage higher. And now they're back around a little under 2% or so. I forget exactly. Look it up. It's like 1.7 or 1.8%. Okay, so we're going to do these calculations on our next worksheet. Slide 69. Important dates. And yes, this is important for you to understand because some people might come up to you and say, wait a minute, I own these shares. How come I didn't get the dividend? Well, there are four dates that are important, the second and third ones being the very important ones. There's a declaration date. This is when the board of directors says, okay, we're going to pay everybody 25 cents a share. And what they tell you is the date of record. Of course, so it's, you know, it's they give you several weeks. So the declaration date will be several weeks before the date of record. So maybe it's, you know, the middle of May. They say, okay, on June 18th, we're going to pay out a dividend. So that's the date of record. But you have to own the shares by the ex-dividend date. And that is 3 days before the date of record. This determines whether one is an official shareholder of a firm and thus eligible to receive the declared dividend. Huh? Why do you have to buy the shares 3 days before when it goes ex-dividend? Well, we'll see in the next slide. But then, of course, there's a payment date, which is several weeks afterwards, where they actually pay the people who own the shares by the date of record. So why, on slide 70, is the ex-dividend date 3 days before the date of record? Well, this is because stock transactions close in 3 days. What? Yeah, you're used to going to the store and buying something and paying them, and that's the date that the transaction closed. Mutual funds close in 1 day. So you go to the mutual fund company and buy, these are open-ended mutual funds we're talking about. You buy $1,000 worth of the shares of the mutual fund, or maybe $50 out of your paycheck or your checking account, and you don't actually own the shares until the next day. Well, stock transactions close in 3 business days. They used to close in 5, now they close in 3. So if you purchase a stock on June 15th, you really don't actually get the stock until June 18th. It'll show up in your account, but it's not there yet. It's pending. It's a pending transaction. So theoretically, and it never works out this way, the opening share price on the ex-dividend date should reflect a drop in price commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So if there were, example, $1 per share dividend, the opening stock price should be reduced $1. Well, it never works out that way, right? Prices are changing all the time. But that's the idea. You have to buy if you want the dividends, you have to buy the shares before the ex-dividend date, 3 days before the date of record. So you will hear people say on slide 71, don't buy the dividend. This is a common saying in the industry. The translation is you're often better off waiting until the ex-dividend date before buying a stock. The logic follows thusly. Well, dividends are taxable transactions. If you buy the dividend before the stock, buy the stock just before the ex-dividend date, you're responsible for paying the tax on the dividends, and presumably the stock will fall commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So you're better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so that you get the stock at a better price and do not generate a taxable transaction. I think it's a bunch of hoo-ha. I mean, I guess if you were buying hundreds of thousands of shares, yes, I guess it would make sense for you to wait until after the ex-dividend date to actually buy the shares. But for the vast majority of us, who cares? So we initiated a transaction for $2.50 or, you know, $20 or whatever. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. You're buying it for the long term, aren't you? Yes, you are. But do know, do understand, do study date of record and ex-dividend date and how that works. Now, this is important. Slide 72. The different types of dividends and the distinction between them are very important. So that's why you're going to study this slide 72 and the next slide 73 over and over and over again. Right? Very good. Okay, now, there are basically two different types of dividends, cash dividends and stock dividends. If you don't remember anything else on this slide, just remember you want cash dividends. You want to be paid in the form of cash. Stock dividends, on the other hand, is a payment of a dividend in the form of additional shares of stock. All else being equal, and it never is, stock dividends have no value because they constitute a dilution of ownership. For example, the board of directors declares a 10% stock dividend. For every 10 shares, you now receive one share. Whoopee! The price just dropped 10%. It's similar to that stock split that we discussed. But unlike a cash dividend, a stock dividend is not taxed. Thank you very much, IRS. You're not taxing me on something that's not worth anything. Isn't that a great thing for you to do? Thank you. Very kind of you, Mr. IRS agent or Ms. IRS agent. So if a company offers you stock dividends, it's time to go look for a different company. Now, it's going to get a little tricky on slide 73 because there are dividend reinvestment plans, which are very cool, by the way. These are plans in which shareholders have cash dividends automatically reinvested into additional shares of the firm's common stock. This is very similar to what mutual funds do. You don't get the cash in your account, you get more shares. This is a taxable transaction, but unlike the stock dividends, there is no additional shares that were issued. You see, what happens, the company will do this for you, but they really don't. If you go to the investor relations menu item in their website, check out Coca-Cola or check out a company that's been around for a long time, Johnson & Johnson. They'll have investor relations, and they'll say, hey, you know, we have this stock reinvestment plan, stock dividend reinvestment plan, a DRIP. Isn't that a great name? I love DRIPs. I love the name. Well, they don't do it. Somebody else does it for them. But if you go with that company through their dividend reinvestment plan, the company that does it for them, I think it's called CompuShare or EquiServe or something like that, they go out to the marketplace and buy the additional shares with the cash that the dividends you received. And then you see it, you see your account start to grow. And there's an example of a dividend reinvestment plan on the website and in Canvas, so check it out. DRIPs are an excellent way to own stock for those interested in long-term growth and not interested in the current income. It allows the investor to take advantage of compounding automatically with normally no or very, very small transaction costs. In the investment club I was a member of, we had a DRIP with San Diego Gas and Electric, Sempra Energy, which is the parent company. And I think it was EquiServe was the company that actually did it for SDG&E. Every once in a while, we get charged 3 cents or 7 cents or 9 cents. And I thought, well, this is great, you know, because we're not paying brokerage firm commissions and we're getting, you know, the best price available, the best price there. They're not doing a markup or a markdown. So I thought it was a great deal. So DRIPs are cool. Check out the little discussion and the examples of the DRIP on the website. And then, finally, we're just going to give you a little tease here because we're going to be speaking about price-to-earnings ratios for the rest of the semester. The price-to-earnings ratio, the PE, the price of a stock divided by the earnings per share. It's a very simple calculation, but it's monumentally important. The most quoted, the most sought and looked at market statistic, the price to earnings ratio. You take the price and divide it by the earnings. So for example, if we had a $20 price in our stock that we've been discussing, and that stock had $2 worth of earnings, we would take 20 divided by 2 and give us a price to earnings ratio of 10. Now notice that the dollars cancel. PE has no dollar sign, no percent sign, even though you're going to put it on the test or on the example. And I'm not going to take off for that, but I'm going to say no, PE is unitless. So traditionally, stocks sold for PEs of 5 to 14, and a PE of 20 was only reserved for the fastest growing stocks. Not anymore. In the late 20s, and then in the late 60s, early 70s, and then in the 1980s and 1990s. And now, PEs of 40, 80, 100, 1,000 are not atypical. They're not typical, but they're not atypical. We will spend a great deal of time learning about PE and other valuation techniques in the next few chapters. So now, we want you to go back over that this presentation, of course, and then this is where we would whip out worksheet number 2, stock worksheet number 2. So there's an answer key and there's a commentary. So do check out worksheet number 2 now. Cool? All right, dear students. Believe it or not, we're ready now to discuss the various types of stocks. We've been talking about stocks, lumping them all together as if they were all the same type of company, and nothing could be further from the truth. So we'll see you in our next presentation when we discuss stock types. Keep studying every day. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College, to your friends, your family, your co-workers. We are so, so proud of you. Thank you so much for being in our class.